And you're listening to radio station WUSB. The time is 6:01. That means time once again for Off the Wall.
Thank you.
And the very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined by Kyle.
Hello.
And you saying those words, or that word right now, is kind of a historical moment, because for the first time in memory that I can remember here at the radio station, the guest in the studio here has a pair of headphones.
Yeah.
It took a long time, folks, and no doubt, thanks to your pledge support, it's... We actually have a pair of headphones for the, and you can hear what you're saying, you can hear what I'm saying. I don't have to actually talk to you directly.
Yeah, it's a really, I'm really happy about the moment. I'm so glad, but it's really weird.
Isn't it weird to hear your own voice?
Well, it sounds distorted or something.
Well, the other radio station, you hear your own voice.
But is it sound this way normally, or?
Oh, you're not getting good levels. You're getting distorted levels.
Am I?
I don't know. If you think you sound distorted, you sound fine to me.
I sound fine on your head. Okay.
Yeah. Do I sound distorted?
It sounds all like, tinny and distorted somehow.
Oh, we got to iron out the kinks, I guess. But the thing is, we finally have a pair of headphones,
a second pair of headphones in the studio.
It took long enough, but we got it.
I'm not complaining.
No doubt it won't be here next week, but still, let's cherish the moment.
So bizarre.
It is bizarre, isn't it?
Wow, okay.
It's been a week of hardship, and certainly nothing for us compared to what's going on in Japan. My God, what happened over there? Triple play. First, massive earthquake, then a tsunami, and maybe worst of all, a nuclear disaster. Wow, I don't even know where to begin. It's hard to even say worst of all after seeing the damage the tsunami did. But it's that fear of the unknown, not knowing what's going to happen next, the danger. The threat to future generations, and this is the reason why I've always opposed nuclear power in the hands of humans. Note that I say in the hands of humans, because I do believe nuclear power is a technology that has vast potential, but we're mere humans at this point, and not very well developed humans either. We have a long way to go. For us to be controlling something like that, it's basically harnessing the power of the sun and driving with it and thinking that you know what you're doing, when in actuality, you're still making a lot of mistakes. And building nuclear power plants near such volatile earthquake faults, bad idea, folks, bad idea. We said that in California. We said that throughout the country, throughout the world. And there are just so many things that can go wrong. Yeah, there are horrible things that can happen with catastrophes. We've seen it. We've seen many different catastrophes over the years. But this is something that could dwarf all of them if it really goes bad. We're talking about uninhabitable places for hundreds, if not thousands of years, if something really bad were to happen. And I don't know. I just it's very complex. It's very complicated how the whole thing works. And there are just so many little things that could happen that could snowball into something so tremendously bad. That's why people oppose the Shoreham nuclear power plant. I showed you that. I took you out to Shoreham and showed you the abandoned nuclear power plant that I got arrested for climbing a fence back, I think it was 1979. It was a long time ago, but I was just a young college student at that point, and it was great. It was a great feeling. Thousands of people showed up. Thousands of people came to the beach at Shoreham to demonstrate against this thing, and a few hundred climbed the fence and got arrested as civil disobedience. And in the end, years later, we won. Because the Suffolk County Legislature, they turned around and they came out against the plant. The Jamesport plant, which was planned for further out east, was also mothballed. That never was built. And we don't have any nuclear power plants on Long Island. And that's a good thing, because Long Island is a dead end. If you had to evacuate, it would be very, very difficult, as proven in the radio play we did here a number of years ago called Shadow of a Long Island. Not so easily said about other places, the Millstone plants in Connecticut, Indian Point, in Westchester, and many, many others throughout the country. All sorts of bad things could happen, as we saw in Harrisburg, again, back in the 70s, and of course, Chernobyl, what happened there in the 80s. There aren't very many accidents that we know of, but when they happen, that feeling of uncertainty and fear is something incalculable, and I just think it's a really bad idea.
Yeah, this reminds me a lot of growing up, because when I was a kid, a lot of There was a lot of subtle media regarding like anti-nuclear stuff. It would make its way into like kids shows and stuff when you're growing up. And
really?
I think
anti-nuclear sentiment in kids shows.
I kind of feel like, you know, a lot of the stuff I grew up on had little like underlying warnings of nuclear dangers. Even something simple as like a animated show we're familiar with, The Simpsons, sort of poking fun at
it. Well, Homer works in a nuclear power plant.
Right.
And he's an idiot. So, right. Yeah, I guess that would make sense in that particular regard.
Other shows, you know, the yellow suits and the barrels with the radioactive symbol on them, you know, down in the bottom of the ocean or something. That's like very cartoon. But as a kid growing up with that, you would pick up little glints of that kind of media and the sentiment of like this, it was sort of like putting it out there that this is a danger. And when you actually grow up and you start looking at this stuff in the media, it's really interesting, because on the one hand it's a technology and it's very powerful and all of that, but at the same time it's very scary, because a lot of this stuff it's designed in industry and in politics and in governments, it's designed to look safe and normal and like a huge achievement and all of that in like mankind's ability to create its, you know, its own energy and all of that. But at the same time, there's so much we don't know and so much that's unproven, and the stakes are really big. I mean, radiation is just so insidious and tough to control when it gets on things, and when it's and the carcinogenic factor too. So I mean, it's just really, really kind of scary. And my whole upbringing, I guess, was it wasn't something that we would talk about or anything like that, but it's salient in the back of my mind. And now as an adult, I'm starting to see like different things like this. I mean, for instance, Three Mile Island and Chernobyl, when I was very, very young when all that was going on. But
you weren't even alive for TMI.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. And then, or Fermi One, which was the other, American nuclear meltdown, that was in Michigan, I believe, or Minnesota, somewhere, in the Midwest.
There was one near Detroit.
Yes.
Yeah. And Michigan, that's not talked about very much.
Iowa. But it's called Fermi 1 or Fermi 2 was the one that melted down there. Those are the only two in the U.S. that have ever melted down. And they've all been civilian ones. They haven't been government installations. And, you know, a lot of our aircraft carriers and military stuff, they're all powered by nuclear technology. And I guess, you know, out on the West Coast also, I guess, there's facilities out there that are government facilities. And that's where a lot of the fuel for weapons has been produced. In fact, the Hanford Nuclear Reservation is opening up for tours this year. They released some dates for people to go and visit the nuclear facility in Washington State. So, but it's just interesting, like how, like, I don't know, like the Superfund sites, how they've been cleaning up Hanford and decommissioning it, and you know how it takes, sometimes the decommissionings are, you know, like they wait 60 years before they move anything because of the half-lives and all of that. And I don't know, the history with weapons and then, you know, corporate nuclear technology, it seems really unsustainable. I mean, they put it out there in the industry and in the media or, you know, corporations, they want you to believe it's the answer. It's like, you know, a really powerful thing, but the impact is sort of swept under the rug, I think. And now we're seeing people having to deal with the impact, and just the downplaying we're seeing in Japan is amazing. Like, you've had to look at it like somewhat critically. And I just think about like, gosh, you know what, why don't they do this? Why can't they do that? I mean, really, they got to get in there and stop it. But I'm nowhere near it. And if you got to imagine on the scene at that facility, they're scrambling. They're doing everything they can, but it's so dangerous. And you know, the reality of radiation is so strong that it's probably very hard to do even the simplest things, you know.
And also, you know, the people are a bit distracted by the double calamity that hit right before that. A major earthquake and a very destructive tsunami really is more than enough for anybody to have to even consider in their lives. And now this, on top of everything else, it's just, this is the one that could have been avoided. This is the one that if common sense had prevailed, people would have said, you know, this it may be tempting, but it's just too much of a risk to have this kind of technology in this kind of a place where this is a significant risk.
Hey, E, did you know that 26 American nuclear facilities, all on the East Coast, use the same proprietary design that Toshiba wants to license?
Toshiba. Yes. They make the nuclear power plants or designs.
I think it's the design, and then GE interprets the design and constructs it. I think that's how it works. I'm not quite sure, but I think Toshiba has wanted to license this design. But in fact, 26 American nuclear facilities, all on the East Coast here, are run with a similar design. I could be wrong, but it's amazing.
But, you know, I'm not sure if the design is flawed. I think this is the design that you're going to get. And if you if such destructive forces are unleashed anywhere in the vicinity of a nuclear power plant, you're going to have this kind of a thing happen.
And yeah, I don't think the design would help.
We've seen four different reactors be catastrophically affected by what's going on. And I don't think there's really a design. I mean, maybe this is a poor design. I'm not sure. But I don't think there's a design that would be impervious to that sort of a thing that has been developed. It's something to consider, because nature is can be very fierce. There are all sorts of things that you cannot plan for. And you have to ask yourself, what's the worst thing that could happen if a calamity were to strike some other type of a plant? Those are the questions you have to answer before you you put the population at risk by putting these things in places where, you know, a lot of people live.
Yeah, I guess you just have to really. I guess what I'm saying is that sustainability is crucial, and I think there's a lot of technologies out there, and nuclear power is on the one hand, you know, very very powerful, but at the same time, I don't know the impact, and when things go wrong, it seems like power plants like this, they can get wildly out of control, and it's the same sort of thing. You know, one thing fails, then other things fail, and then all of a sudden you have this enormous area and health risk. It just doesn't seem like a fail-proof technology, something that can be run 100% safely. Well,
that's,
when there's
that's
other
the thing.
Options.
I mean, we work with technology every day. There is no such thing as something that is fail-proof or fail-safe. What's the term? I don't even know the right phrase.
Durable. Reliable.
Perfect. Something that will never fail, that you know every single intricate detail of.
Or how about something that's just non-toxic?
Yeah. Good luck with that. So that's the situation that... that's being faced right now in Japan, and boy, we've watched the footage, and we've seen all kinds of interesting coverage on various networks, not widely available in this country. We've been watching Euronews and BBC and Al Jazeera, and you know, actually, to Cablevision's credit, well, first of all, to their credit for carrying Euronews and BBC World, they have opened up a channel for people that really want to see what's going on in Japan and speak Japanese. On channel 265, you can tune in to live Japanese television, and it doesn't cost anything. That they're doing that as a service. And that's the kind of thing that cable networks and satellite systems should be doing in situations like this, opening up the communications.
Yes.
So that we can see what's going on. I don't think there's a single provider in the United States anywhere that carries NHK World, which is the Japanese broadcaster's world channel,
right.
That would show you exactly what's going on. Well, not really. You know, I have to say, well, this is true of any country. They're going to be a bit slanted, a bit biased as far as the kinds of things that they cover, the kinds of things that they say. And in Japan in particular, and I saw this on BBC coverage, actually, somebody who was there was saying, well, it's kind of customary in Japanese culture to make like things are carrying on as normally as possible, to not really show too much of a crisis. But in a situation like this, you need to know how much of a crisis there actually is. So as far as finding out how bad the nuclear accident is, and just how catastrophic, who's going to be affected, who's to blame, you might not find that out from NHK or from any Japanese officials. You just might not right away anyway, because there's a lot of emphasis on dignity, saving face, maintaining control, that sort of thing. So if you're really interested in finding out more than that, you might have to turn to other networks that are covering the story.
But you wouldn't know unless you were able to access their network. You wouldn't know that they're being slanted. And it's really important to be able to compare media.
Exactly.
Able to be critical.
The war between Georgia and Russia, I was watching Russia Today. That's carried on Time Warner in New York City. And it's fascinating to see how they viewed the story completely differently than how the rest of the media was viewing the story. Not saying who's right, who's wrong. It's just interesting to see the different perspectives. But it's wrong for us to have to say, well, you have to go into New York City in order to see that station because it's only carried on this cable system. We should have access to all the networks. We should be able to choose which ones we want to see, what languages we'd like to hear things in. The technology exists. It's out there. There are satellites all over the place. And, you know, you can simply program different networks, different providers to channel things out to people as they want them. Certainly a lot more than what we do now. Speaking of satellites, we saw a couple of satellites last week after the show, as we promised.
We did.
We had to race because those stupid lights at the athletic field. I'm sorry. You know, I know everybody in this campus is in love with sports right now. But, you know, there's no reason to turn on these lights that you can see from outer space when there's not even a game being played in this stupid stadium that they have that destroyed all the trees that used to exist over there. I've got issues. So we couldn't see the space station from campus. We had to drive all the way to the beach. We made it with about 10 seconds to spare, jumped out of the car, looked up, and hey, there's a space shuttle, there's Discovery, and there's the space station following it halfway across the sky. And there are actually people there looking at it, which was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And we got mail from people that said, hey, I saw the space station, thanks to you guys. And
yeah, they were really excited.
Good to know that we can provide that service.
Yes.
And, you know, the space station is still up there, so you can still see it. Go to heavensabove.com, and there's a dash between heavens and above, and just fill in your information, and you can find out where the space station will be visible in your area. And guaranteed, you can see it at least once a week. Of course, the sky has to be clear, and sometimes it gets really bright, and it's the coolest thing. You know, the really coolest thing, though, was seeing two of them at the same time, seeing the space shuttle and the space station. And that was incredible. Just looking up in the sky, you can see fantastic things sometimes.
Yeah, and they were unmistakable. We definitely saw them following one another, and they safely landed.
Yeah, that was the Discovery landed. The space station's still up there. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
The space station isn't designed to land.
No.
But Discovery safely landed, and that was really neat to see that.
And now Endeavour is getting ready to go up.
Yes, Endeavour is near the launch pad or at the launch pad being prepared for a launch in April.
Yeah, its last launch. It's too bad that all these last launches are happening, and I'm not really sure what the plan is after that. I do know one of the networks that we've been watching a lot of before all the crises started hitting was NASA TV. I got to say, NASA TV is the best channel there is. And you can only get that on DirecTV. It's not on any cable system. Years ago, believe it or not, on Cablevision here on Long Island, it was Channel 1. Yeah, there was a Channel 1 on these systems. And Channel 1 was NASA TV. It was the coolest thing ever. That's how I first got introduced to it. I don't know. For some reason, it's the geekiest channel around, even geekier than Tech TV was. Basically, these people are just so into what they do. We saw this documentary, this really amateurish documentary made by an astronaut walking around with a camcorder, just talking to various people, joking, clowning around with them. He was talking about how to retrieve the solid rocket boosters from the ocean. Is that
correct?
What he was doing? Yeah, it was like watching your uncle make a video. It was that amateurish and silly, but it was great at the same time.
It's behind the scenes. Yeah, it was really cool. And then weeks later, after they recovered the solid rocket boosters, they played back all the video from the boosters landing.
Oh my God! Yeah, they have cameras on. You don't see these things anywhere else, but they have cameras on the solid rocket boosters. Not just one. A bunch, And what they do is they play this back with all the sound problems or lack of sound or video clipping in and out, whatever it is, they play it back in full. And you just see what happens from the moment of separation from the space shuttle to the moment it splashes down in the ocean. And that is the coolest thing ever. What other channel is going to just show you that without thinking, oh my God, we can't have dead air. We can't have this bad video. We have to have a crawl at the bottom of the screen. And how are people going to know what channel they're watching? Believe me, when you're watching NASA TV, you know what channel you're watching. And yeah. It's something that is riveting because they will keep the scene from a space shuttle, a camera view of Earth, on for half an hour at a time without saying a single word. Or they'll show you Mission Control in Houston, people just walking around. You'll see them drinking their sodas. You'll see them working at their desks. There's something so relaxing and cool about that, and I just wish more people could appreciate it.
And they're very deliberate, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd think, oh wow, this would never fly on some major network, but it's NASA, and they are very they've upped their production quality. I've been watching for a while now. And
well, they have that glitzy things. Little intro thing they're doing.
Hey, you know, that's a great example. There's a lot of subtle things that they do with their channel, And it's improved. It's got I think it's in HD now. They've got a lot of these new camera angles and there's actually like really rich content that's coming out of there.
But the way they do it is very cheesy as far as the way they present the videos and how they intro things. And that's the way it should be.
Right,
it shouldn't be slick and glossy. It should be, you know, down to earth and I don't want to say amateurish, but not the kind of professionalism that we're used to from network TV. Yeah, because that lends itself to fakeness and plastic attitudes. You know you're getting the real thing here. And what matters is getting things up into space, and that's what they're good at.
Right.
And they're not videographers, but
they've been...
It's just great watching, I think, because I feel like I'm really part of the story.
They've been doing interviews in Mission Control, like just adding little things here and there. And again, it's very deliberate, and they've you know gradually introduced parts that are new and different, but they still keep that geeky sort of honesty, I think.
Mm-hmm. And they have technical issues. If they're doing an interview, hey, maybe the microphone doesn't work. They'll fix it on the air or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like the kind of interview you'd expect to hear on WUSB, the kind of thing that people here would do where they're working just to get the content out, not really caring about how it looks or who it plays to, but just getting somebody to say what's on their mind or to explain the facts.
Right.
And that's, you just learn so much from that.
It's cool.
It's really is. Cool. And it's just fun to watch. So yeah, NASA TV, you can get it online, of course. You can get all these networks online. And that goes without saying, even though I'm saying it now. It's good to be able to get it on your cable networks and on your satellite networks, if for nothing else, because all the people that aren't savvy with their computers can just turn a channel and hear it. That's what makes being on the radio so magical. Yeah, we could be doing a podcast someplace. It's not the same thing as being on a radio because some poor schmuck is driving right now and meant to go to one station and for some reason didn't turn the dial far enough and he's stuck with us now. You know, and that's power. That's the kind of power you don't get on the internet.
And chance.
Maybe power is the wrong word, but that's just, it's a way of reaching people. And it's in our case, it's local. It's something that we can talk about that's right here on Long Island. We're talking to people who are driving around or in their homes. And that's pretty cool. And of course, we're also talking to people around the world. So that's even cooler that we can reach those people and have them reach us as well.
Do you think the phones work?
The phones?
Yeah, do you think people could call? I mean, if they're moved to
of course.
Call?
Well, we're going to take phone calls.
Oh, we are.
I think about 10 minutes or so.
Cool. Well, what else you got? What's going on?
I'm just looking at some of the stories about the Japanese thing. This is a weird one. Somebody sent us. This apparently happened on Fox News, and wouldn't you know, Fox News really does their homework here. This was yesterday on Your World with Neil Cavuto. This map popped up, which detailed the locations of Japan's nuclear power plants. And they have all these different names. One name seemed out of place, and it was Shibuya Eggman. Shibuya Eggman. Doesn't show up in the International Atomic Energy Agency's list of Japanese nuclear power stations, and nor does it show up on a map of from the Department of Energy's International Nuclear Safety Center. No listing for Shibuya Eggman. Doesn't show a nuclear power plant anywhere near that location that was on the Fox News map. So this person for MediaMatters.org did a little bit of research And a quick Googling of Shibuya Eggman turned up no meaningful results. A Nexus search was also fruitless. However, further inquiries revealed that Eggman is the name of a dance club in a trendy neighborhood of Tokyo called Shibuya. That's right. It just so happens, a Fox graphic appears to place the alleged reactor in Tokyo. So, I don't know who played a joke on them, but somebody played a joke on Fox, and they labeled Shibuya Eggman as a location of a nuclear power plant. It just goes to show, you know, you can criticize NASA TV for not being slick and glossy, but the folks that are slick and glossy, when they get it wrong, boy, they really get it wrong.
I bet there's some questions being asked at that dance club, you know.
Uh-huh, and I bet there's some lectures being given out at Fox News as well. Then you got the case of Gilbert Gottfried. Now, did you hear about this? This is like, I didn't know this, but they had the, you know, that stupid commercial with the Aflac duck?
Is Problem Child 5 coming out?
I don't even know what that means. I'm proud to say I don't know what that means.
It's a movie.
Okay. Featuring the Aflac. Well, you mentioned this guy's name, so you know that he's the Aflac duck.
Yeah.
Gilbert Gottfried. Okay, fine. Whatever. What the Aflac duck basically just says Aflac, sounding like a duck, right? That's all he does.
Aflac!
Yeah, you got it.
Like
that. That's pretty much what he does.
It's not quite the right cadence or tone, but
and pretty much the whole spiel is somebody saying something. It's what, insurance, is that what it is, or an insurance company?
Yeah.
Basically a human being talking to another human being, asking, well, where can I get good insurance? And this duck is walking around for some reason, and the duck every break says
Aflac.
Yeah. And of course the human, because he doesn't speak duck, doesn't realize that the duck is actually telling him the name of an insurance company. And that's the whole thing. That is how America sells products, and that's what we're supposed to. You know, I turn down the radio every time that thing comes on. I really do.
Well, E, now, have you explained why? Now, I have a theory.
Okay, go ahead.
Ducks can't tweet.
No, you're way ahead of me here on this story. I haven't even gotten to the Twitter part.
Well, that's my theory. Go ahead, explain.
My question before you even get into the story, why do you need a comedian to say Aflac over and over again? Why do you need a comedian to do that? You're doing a better job of it than
him. I hear
you.
In fact, it's a brand.
This guy, he's been fired. He's been fired because of what he did, which we're going to tell you in a second. But because he's been fired, Kyle, maybe you can be the new voice of Aflac.
Well, I want to get into, you know, that kind of work. It would be very,
you
very
fun. You
want
to get into sounding like a duck on the radio.
I will
should
take
I call you Kyle the Duck from now on?
Offers,
because you can get your start right here at USB.
I know.
Is that what you want?
USB launched me right into my voiceover career with Aflac. Right. It's lame.
We had Sammy the Goose here once. But that's a whole different story.
Don't start. Are you serious? Who's Sammy the Goose? I don't even know what
it's
you're talking
about. It's an SCTV
about.
Reference. And those of you out there who know, please write in to otw@2600.com. In fact, I've told you too much already. You should be able to get the reference without me saying where it's from. But no, the voice of Aflac. Okay, so basically this this nitwit thought it would be fun to tweet some jokes about Japan, about things that are happening in Japan. Now, the story appeared on CNN, and basically
It's rather callous.
It's written in what's rather callous? The jokes or CNN?
Joking about Japan.
Well,
right
I
now.
Agree, but CNN, it's kind of a flippant story that they wrote. The Aflac duck lost its voice Monday after the insurance giant fired the comedian behind the commercial quack for tweeting jokes about the earthquake and tsunamis that have devastated Japan. Just, you know, that sentence. Reading that sentence 20 years ago, I would have thought the whole world had gone mad. You know, commercial quack, tweeting jokes, as Aflac duck. That's just too much craziness in one sentence.
Yeah, how can that sentence. Be news?
Anyway, the Columbus, Georgia-based company fired Gilbert Gottfried less than an hour after discovering the tweets, according to a news release from Aflac. Gilbert's recent comments about the crisis in Japan were lacking in humor and certainly did not represent the thoughts and feelings of anyone at Aflac.
That's a pretty good turnaround.
Yeah, but as soon as they discovered the tweets, who knows how long those tweets were out there.
Twitter can get you fired in an hour or less.
Yeah, and you know, this, I got to say, I'm all for freedom of speech and all that kind of thing. This is not a freedom of speech issue because obviously if you offend a company that you work for, they can fire you, and this is offensive to
yes, sir.
Not just the company, but a lot of people. The thing is, then CNN goes on to say the tweets included this, posted at 12:33 p.m., then another one posted at 11:00, and they list the jokes. I'm not going to say the jokes because they are in very bad taste. And yeah, you know what? I could say the jokes, and we might even laugh a little bit at them because there is humor there, but it's just not the right time for that kind of humor, I don't think. And if you think it's something you want to share, then go ahead and share it. But I don't have to play a part in that, do I? So I'm not going to read the jokes in the story. And I don't understand why the jokes had to be reproduced as well.
It doesn't what really, are the jokes?
Not, I'm not going to say the jokes. I will say something that's...
I didn't
that's,
read the jokes. I don't know what they are.
I'll show you
were
the jokes.
Were they funny?
They're a little bit funny, yeah. They're a little bit
funny,
like, but
they're... Are they like nightclub, 4 a.m, everybody's trash,
they're
one-liners. Time to go home?
They're one-liners.
Okay.
You know? I mean, you know, we've all heard the space shuttle jokes. We've all heard 9/11 jokes. We've all heard George W. Bush jokes. There comes a point where you're past the tragedy of the situation,
right,
where you can actually laugh at what has happened. But I don't think this is the time. I don't think it's happened.
It's soon.
You like how I made George W. Bush into a national tragedy? That was slick. Yeah. But here's the thing that's funny. Here's the thing that's really... they say, let's see, this person is a Japanese representative of Aflac. And they pointed out that Gottfried had not provided the quack for the Japanese version of the Aflac duck. Yeah. That is important. That is important for them to point out that if you hear an Aflac duck in Japan, which why in God's name do you have to say it differently in Japanese? It's the same damn word. It wasn't him. It was somebody else. Aflac will immediately set plans in motion to conduct a nationwide casting call to find a new voice of the iconic Aflac duck.
Aflac.
Okay, how is that going to work? How is that casting call going to go? There's only one word you have to say. I mean, you could literally phone that in. You could literally do that. Or you know what? You could even just use recordings of the old one. Nobody's going to know the difference. And here, Kyle, you can read the jokes to yourself. They're on that piece of paper.
All right.
While I move on to the next story here.
All right, I'm with you. Just hold on.
Okay. I just kind of want to see your reaction there. I mean, it's funny. It's just not, you know, not the kind of thing that really has to be heard by everybody. You're not laughing at all.
I'm trying to find it.
Oh, yeah. It's hard to tell the joke from the rest of
the story.
Of it.
Yeah.
I can circle
no,
it for
thanks.
You.
I'm
all
okay.
Right. Well, here's a story. I want you to hear this story, though, because I think this is something you'll be interested in. So I don't want you to miss it.
Oh.
Photographers are astir. News of a bill introduced by State Senator Jim Norman of Florida that would get this, make it a felony to take a picture of a farm without the owner's permission. What do you think of that? See, you're not paying any attention because you're reading.
Oh, that's horrible.
Stupid joke.
That's terrible. I read the one about the school.
Don't tell people what the joke is about.
All right. What did you say about photographers?
See, now I got to repeat. Radio time is valuable, Kyle.
Okay,
I got to repeat the same thing over and over again because you're reading stupid jokes from a duck.
Come on, we're polished.
Calm down. Okay. Photographers are astir at news of a bill introduced by State Senator Jim Norman of Florida that would make it a felony to take a picture of a farm without the owner's permission. A person who photographs, video records, or otherwise produces images or pictorial records, digital or otherwise, at or of a farm or other property where legitimate agriculture operations are being conducted without the written consent of the owner or an authorized representative of the owner commits a felony of the first degree. Don't say that word. I guess.
No, I was going to...
You were going to say a nasty word, weren't you?
Balderdash.
Okay, you can say that, I guess.
That's balderdash.
What does that mean, anyway?
It's balderdash.
Yeah, but here's the thing. This was introduced on Tuesday. It's called SB-1246. I think it was last Tuesday it was introduced. This was written on a blog and reported on the New York Times. The specific freedom-enhancing element of this particular initiative is that apparently freedom-hating animal rights activists have been known to secretly document farm activities in order to advance socialism.
Well,
that sums it up. I guess that's it.
So you can't take a picture of a farm from a public road.
This hasn't been passed into law, but this is the kind of thinking that comes from forbidding photography of anything, whether it be certain buildings or train tracks or
people,
quote unquote, sensitive things.
Their babies that they want to show everybody, and yeah, all
when
of
you
it.
Start when you start restricting things like
and
this, people,
your own family, and
mm-hmm. Absolutely. So that's where we stand. You got to be careful with these things.
You know, they plaster, you know, their entire lives all over the web, but, you know, you walk up on a street and all of a sudden you're the worst person in the world for violating their privacy. You know, that's amazing. I think we should be able to photograph farms if there's bad stuff going on there, because they're putting that into our food chain. And isn't there a food security issue there, or a mink fur security issue? I mean, I think we should know what's going into our mink supply.
Well, okay, yeah, there's that, but there's also the fact that you should be able to photograph anything that's you can see with your eyes. I think that's fair.
Yeah, I just think that...
Unless you're pouring through secret documents, I guess maybe there's an argument against photographing that. But if you're walking around outside and someone says you can't take a picture of that building, I'm going to call them on that.
I don't understand why people have such a big problem with the fact that it is completely legal to photograph anything you want in a public space.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean,
well, a farm isn't a public space.
Okay, but from
a
public
street. It is a farm.
You can photograph anything on mm-hmm. a public street. If there's a road, a farm road that is public, you can photograph that farm. Now, you should
ask...
What
about your house on Google Earth?
You should ask permission. Technically, Google should ask permission. Mm-hmm. But...
I don't think you need to ask permission to take a picture of something that you can see by walking down the street. I just don't think so.
It's an obligatory sort of...
it's polite.
Polite, yeah. Exactly. It's a polite thing to do to say, excuse me, could I photograph you if you're out in a public space?
If you're photographing somebody's face, yeah, I could see asking permission for
that. But that's why Google can do what they do, because they don't have to. There's no law.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be the same thing with all kinds of things. I mean, this happened in the past with bridges and all kinds of other infrastructure. At any rate, we could go on and on. I'd love to go toe-to-toe.
Yeah, yeah, with whoever is passing stupid laws like this. We got a lot of feedback from the high-speed rail discussion. But, you know, I'm seeing a lot of negativity as far as some of the articles coming out. USA Today had a piece or an editorial, high-speed train system has a long way to go. Of course, Fox News was against it, saying that it's a train to nowhere, or the idea was a bullet train to nowhere. 41% favor high-speed rail plan, 46% oppose it. You know, it's just, this country really... We oppose healthcare. We oppose any kind
slow.
Of improvement to our lives as unconstitutional.
These trains are too fast.
But you know, I think the ultimate and most symbolic argument in favor of a better infrastructure and better transit system in this country was this tragic story: a nephew of the Dalai Lama was killed in Northeast Florida in a traffic accident after he was hit by a car while walking along a highway. The Dalai Lama's nephew. I mean, I don't know if high-speed rail would have prevented that from happening, but we are too car happy. There are too many damn cars around, and we see the way people drive all the time, and it's unhealthy in so many levels. But that's only one aspect to all of this. High-speed rail is a good thing in all the countries that it exists in. Even in Japan right now, where the country has been decimated, they're going to recover from this, and high-speed rail already is running again, and that's how people are getting around. So it's something we should really consider seriously.
Yeah, I totally, wholeheartedly agree with you about the so many ways that driving is flawed. You know, we get sold on this independence and all of that. But you're also very isolated, and I think that completely. That scales out to how we interact with each other as a country and as communities, because you're in a bubble, you're in an isolated tin can, you're separate. I mean, even a motorcycle, you're more in tune with the world and things around
you. It's fine to be independent and to do these things, to have the open highway. I love going out on long trips on roads and things like that, but I have no trouble paying more for gas for that luxury. It is a luxury. It is a luxury to be able to do that. And gas is over $4 a gallon now in many places because of the Libyan unrest, which really doesn't make a whole lot of sense when you figure it all out, because I'm sure those prices will stay up there for a while, long after any unrest is over. But in other parts of the world, Europe, for instance, they pay double what we pay for gas, and they get along fine. They really do. We just have to change our habits a little bit, and it's not hard to get used to things. In fact, we talked about our hardship a little bit as being dwarfed in comparison to the rest of the world, but we had to, the last couple of days, we were without heat because the heater in the house we're in decided to break down, and we could have gotten an emergency
break. It just something needed
the
fixing.
The belt broke.
Yeah, I need a replacement.
Could have gotten the guy to come out there in the middle of the night, but you know what? We were busy working on all kinds of projects and had to go other places. Didn't have time to wait around, so. It worked out that we had to stay in a house where the temperature was about 55 degrees, and a lot of people could not do that. A lot of people could not handle that. But you just adjust a little bit. You wear warm clothes. You just jog around the house a little bit more.
I prefer bundling up over being profoundly hot.
Overheated, yeah. Overheated is not good.
Yeah, I mean, I lived through a summer or two in Chicago, and boy, that's miserable.
Uh-huh.
Sleeping in hot weather if there's no air conditioning and stuff.
And the guy came today to fix the heater, and he said, "You know what? You probably saved a bundle in fuel by not having the heat on for the last 2 days." And, you know, I figure he's probably right. It's probably enough to buy dinner or something. Wouldn't that be nice?
Oh, thanks. Like that.
Dinner for one.
Oh.
Well, anyway, hardship, you can get used to it. It's not something you should strive for, but it's not the end of the world. I mean, this guy was flabbergasted that we survived 2 days with temperatures in the 50s. It's not that big a deal. You can really do it.
I don't know where I'm from in the Northwest. That's like great, great outdoor weather. And mm-hmm. I don't know. I just sleep better when it's like cool and you can, you know,
exactly.
Just put another layer on. It's all about layers.
I slept in a sleeping bag last night with two jackets on top of me, and I was warm. I was comfortable. I was more comfortable than when the heat's on. Just felt really good. Felt like I was camping
in my
own house.
The heat kind of dries you out a little bit.
It does. It's not good for you.
Yeah, you know, throw some wool socks on and add some layers and you can really get some good sound rest. So
yeah.
It was not
the other hardship I had to go through in the last week was,
yes.
And I told people about this a few months ago. I had to go back for a return colonoscopy.
Oh boy.
And you know, I gotta say, folks, if you have not gotten one of those and you're over 30, definitely consider it. It saves lives. It really does. I know of a number of people who have had their lives saved by things being detected. In my case, they found a polyp last September, the kind that if continues to grow and is left untreated could turn into something bad. It's a few steps away from something actually bad. Still enough to give you pause because it's like I think I described it as having a sleeper Al-Qaeda cell inside your own body that's going to just wake up at a moment's notice.
I don't remember that.
Well, okay, that's only in my head. But yesterday I had to go back for the follow-up, which is a second one.
Right.
And boy, well, you got to be a witness as to how much fun it was preparing for that the day before. I couldn't eat anything, just a liquid diet, couldn't eat anything at all after midnight. And it was basically, that's the worst part of it. When you actually go into the room for the procedure, it's not bad, it's not invasive. And the thing is, they were pushing me on a different kind of drug this time. The first time I had this done in September, they gave me the kind of drug that I think it's, you know, I don't, it's a horrible thing to say.
This?
I think it's the date rape drug. I think that's what it is, where you basically don't remember anything that happened, but you're conscious throughout. Because, you know, I remember just going in there and thinking, okay, it's about to begin. Then all of a sudden it was over and I had not lost consciousness. And this time they really were pushing a different kind of drug on me. And
oh, man.
The thing is, they kept saying all the names of these drugs, and I'm not a pharmacist. I don't know all these drug names. I just know it's the kind that this is the reaction. I didn't want to say to the doctor, oh, it's a date rape drug. I wanted to say the one where you stay conscious. But apparently they don't want you to stay conscious. They said it's much better if you get knocked out. Not anesthesia, but you take a certain kind of drug, and I don't remember the name of it.
Can I elaborate?
Please.
Well, basically, I helped. You know, I was there because you need help when you go in for these procedures.
Yeah, you have to have somebody
and
drive you out because
exactly.
You'll be a bit woozy afterwards.
And it's good to have somebody to help, you know, just make sure everything's right, hang on to your stuff, and just, you know, make sure things go smoothly. And I think it was good of you to resist, you know, some new drug or this or that before you can do a little research, before, I mean, if you know that the one prior worked and you'd like the way it went and that you were conscious and this, that, and the other thing, then why, you know, start diving into experimental drugs when you're about to be in a vulnerable position where you're concerned about a medical
issue?
But I
did want to experiment with the previous drug because I wanted to sort of try to keep track of time and see what happened to my perception of that as it went on.
Yes.
But it was not to be because everybody, the doctor, the nurse, one nurse came in and said, I've had this drug 6 times and you're going to love it. You got to have this. I wanted to ask her, why have you had this drug 6 times? You're dipping into the supply at night. What's going on here?
So as we're preparing for this, they are, you know, continuing to talk about this drug. And can we name names?
Well, if you know the name of the
both
drug,
of us had no idea.
Don't name the doctor or anything.
No,
that.
No, okay. The drug. And so both of us don't have any clue. But I'm with you. I'm like, well, you know what? Maybe you want to do some research. Stick with the older stuff. And then they had the doctor come in. All this succession of people really pushing this drug. Mm-hmm. The drug is propofol.
That was it.
And at
how do you remember
that? At this point, both of us had really no idea. But mm-hmm. I want to tell about what I was doing while I was waiting.
Okay.
Okay, so they finally get you to agree to the propofol. And I'm like, well, I don't know what that is. But okay, if they're so convinced that it's better, cleaner, it's just one drug and it'll be a much better recovery, I'm thinking, okay, then so you changed your mind. And I thought, okay, after, you know, being pressured a little bit.
When the doctor himself comes in and says, you know, the procedure will go better if you take this drug, then you sort of agree.
You won't move if he has to actually do something while he's in the middle of the procedure.
He's sticking God knows what up there. I don't want him to be angry at me. You know, so
right.
I'm going to do what he says. And
if they have to remove a polyp or something, they don't, if you move or you're jostled during mm-hmm. that, I mean, then he could miss or something could happen. So it's better.
Exactly.
So, I mean, under the right bit of convincing, I think you made the right choice.
I'm just not used to being put out, I you know,
right.
Not inconvenienced. I mean, knocked out where I go to sleep.
So here I am.
Yes.
Waiting out in the waiting room. And it took a long time. You were in there for an hour, and I'm watching. They had ABC, which is, I think, Channel 7.
Yes.
And I'm watching daytime TV, and the soaps end, and 4 o'clock rolls around, and who's on TV but Oprah with Katherine Jackson. And all of a sudden, Oprah is pushing Katherine Jackson into reminiscing about Michael overdosing on none other than propofol.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. They put you under with the Michael Jackson drug, the stuff that was in his system when he was dead. He was addicted to this stuff. I'm sitting there sweating bullets because you're under for an hour and a half, and I'm thinking, oh,
wow.
My God.
Wow.
They pulled I'm like, what is going on? And all it took was sitting out in the waiting room for 5 minutes then to have propofol on ABC while my good friend is under with this stuff. I could not believe it. I was blown away, E.
Well, let me tell you what it was like going under, because they basically stick this into your veins, and they say, well, this might burn a little bit, and I you know, the question I ask is, it's going to burn where? And before I was even able to finish asking the question, all of a sudden I feel this like tingling all throughout my head, my face, and it's like, wow, that's an unusual feeling. And then literally the next thing I knew, somebody was waking me up, and I had no idea where I was. I thought I was at my house, and I was totally out of it for a little while. That was the first time in my life I've ever gone to sleep without going to sleep, you know, just
yeah.
All of a sudden it's like lights out. It was very strange, very weird, and I thought I was dreaming. I was trying to remember what I was dreaming about, but I could not, but I had the sense that I was dreaming while I was under. And I'd sure like to know, but it was an interesting thing. Scary though, to be put under like that. But, again, the procedure went very quickly for me and painlessly. They did find a second polyp, though. Here's the thing. It might have been remnants of the first one. They're not sure. And again, it's good that they find these things when they go in there. But I read the report afterwards. You know what? The doctor marks inside your intestines with some kind of ink to say where it actually was. I mean, he's
got a tattoo.
He's tagging my intestinal wall there without my permission. You know, he's like going all Banksy in there.
Did he do a Banksy?
I don't know what he did. I didn't get to see it, but and that was not part of the agreement that he was going to be, you know, I don't know. But the thing is,
how would you know if Banksy was there?
I wouldn't know. And he's the kind of person that would do something like that. But yeah, it's so important to do these things, to have things checked out, because at least now I know I don't have any of those things there right now, and that's good. I'm going to keep getting checked up, whenever they tell me to. And a lot of people are worried about insurance and about all sorts of things. You have to put that aside. My insurance battles are separate from the medical issues. You never let your medical health suffer because of stupidity in an insurance company. That's rule number one. I don't care what anyone says. Those two things are not going to be related like that.
You got to take care of yourself. You got to be an advocate for yourself. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad you had no like side effects and everything went well. And I know the feeling of being put under. I've had a surgery, like a knee issue, and then also my wisdom teeth. They put you under general anesthesia for.
See, I take Novocaine for things like that.
Right. Well, I had different complicated procedures, but yeah, that's really cool that nothing abnormal happened and everything went smoothly.
It's been an interesting week, and I regret that we talk so much that we don't have time for phone calls. I'm sorry, people must kid us, but it was interesting. It was a good conversation, and since we don't talk any other time, it's good to catch up like this. And so let's resume our silent treatment towards each other, and we'll resume the show next week. Maybe we can talk some more.
Yes,
maybe.
And are you a freeborn man
in the USA? Hey, St. Patrick's Day is coming up on Thursday.
Oh, indeed.
We should do something green. See you next week.
Oh, the breakfast stout.
Oh, yes.
All day on St. Patrick's.
We got to find that. OTW at 2600.com. Good night.
When the fight was right, so they sent him to the war. Very well gone away, there's nothing left to say. With Staunch and Joe and an Aaron Gold, my love's in America. The calling of the rosary, Spanish wine from far away. I'm a free-born man, love the USA. Yeah! Goodbye. I remembered how I swore that I'd come back to you one day. And as the sunset came to meet the evening on a hill, I told you I'd always love you, I always did, I always will. Very well gone away, there's nothing left to say. But to say adieu to your eyes as blue as the woods are in the bay. To beat Jim Dwight, a man of war who was often heard to say, I'm a free-born man of the USA. I'm a free-born man.